You are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFPU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I'm your host, Erin O'Sullivan. Today, we are going to be speaking with Leanne Maylee Hilgert, founder of the vegan fashion label Vote Couture. She started working on the label in 2008, launched the line in 2009, opened her first store in Brooklyn, New York in 2012, and in 2013 became the first all-vegan fashion label to present at New York Fashion Week. So you're already impressed, right? Well, you just wait, because now I am going to read you just a couple of excerpts from the in-depth article that CNN ran on the label in the wake of the Fashion Week show. What you say? The CNN ran a major story on an ethical vegan fashion label during a period when fashion seems to be taking its inspiration from Game of Thrones, and even the fur trim seems to have fur trim. Damn straight they did. And the headline was, Vegan Couture Faux Meets Fabulous. For Leanne Maylee Hilgert, being vegan isn't only about what she eats and chooses to wear each day. Avoiding meat and dairy in her diet and animal-derived products in her closet is just part of the equation for the 30-year-old designer, businesswoman, and animal lover. As founder of fashion label Vote Couture, her dedication to creating animal-free coats, sweaters, and other cold-weather gear has earned her a global cult following among animal rights activists and eco-conscious fashionistas. This week, she took her philosophy to New York Fashion Week, where she debuted her first ready-to-wear line in a solo show Wednesday, less than 5 years after starting Vote Couture in 2008. Stella McCartney, Charlotte Ronson, and other big-name designers have created fur-free collections in previous seasons, but Vote Couture is the first independent fashion house to show during New York Fashion Week with animal and cruelty-free built into its brand DNA, from its ultra-suede elbow patches to thin slate-lined winter jackets. Though Vote's line comes at a time when consumers seem more willing than ever to pay a premium for products from companies or businesses whose values align with theirs, industry insiders say the company is swimming against the tide in a season expected to bring new twists on leather and fur. But Hilgert, an activist at heart, is undaunted. She believes that there are people like her who care about where their clothes come from and how they're made. It's Vote's role to make those options more accessible, she said. Vote's values infuse all aspects of the show, from the animal-free makeup and hair products used on the models to the vegan Petit Four and, leashed rescue dogs. Try and say that 10 times fast. We're led around the audience by volunteers from the Humane Society of New York and Badass Brooklyn Animal Rescue. The list of sponsors included some of the biggest names in animal rights activism, the Humane Society of the United States, PETA, Farm Sanctuary, and Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. So, without further ado, the warmest of welcomes to Leanne Maylee Hilgert.
Thank you.
I'm really not sure where to start because it seems like you kind of have sort of the coolest life ever.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, anybody that has a penchant for jealousy should probably tune out now, because all I can say is your life really seems rather enviable, at least from the outsider's point of view.
I appreciate that.
So I guess where we should start is where I usually start, and just ask you to tell us a bit about your history and how you got interested in animal issues.
Sure. So I can remember as far back as when I was six, there's a girl down the street who got a rabbit fur coat for Christmas. And I didn't know anything about, fur farming or traps or animal electrocution. But what I did know was that there was a little girl who had a coat, and that meant that there were rabbits who were dead. And to me, that was just such a simple absurdity that lives were taken so this girl could have a stupid coat. And it was a stupid coat. It was so stupid that I was like, this is just not right. And, I feel like as a child, it's like some things are so simple that everybody else kind of gets okay with. And I also just was one of those kids whose blood boiled if, someone was getting picked on at school or someone was unfair about something. I just couldn't stand by and handle that. So when I was eight, I was the artist in the class, and I, went door-to-door selling art that I'd created to raise money for the local animal shelter. And then when I was 10, my social studies fair project, they asked you to, just pick a topic of something that you wanted to learn more about. And my mom had given me all the stickers from all the different animal and environmental groups that she donated to. She wasn't crazy involved with them or anything. She just really cared a lot about whatever she could do to support groups that were doing wonderful things. And that included humanitarian groups, environmental and animal issues. And there were these stickers, I think they were from PETA, and they said, unseen they suffer, unheard they cry, in agony they linger, in loneliness they die. And I had these stickers and I didn't know what was going on, but I knew we were doing something to animals that no one was talking about. So when they said in school, like, pick a topic you want to read galore, you want to eat, breathe, sleep this topic. And I was like, I want to know what we're doing to animals. I want to know how we eat them. I want to know how we wear them. I want to know what happens before, what happens after. And I therefore picked my topic to be the fur industry, factory farming, and vivisection. And I named it Being Cruel Isn't Cool, which was kind of a 10-year-old title. And then I ended up selling that to currently in existence t-shirt slogan business called Wildware. It was the first slogan t-shirt that I designed, and that was sold nationally. I actually have a friend, Lagusta, who owns Lagusta's Luscious, the vegan chocolate shop upstate, who actually has the t-shirt that I designed when I was 10. She bought it when she was like 12, I think. So we became friends like 15 years later. But yeah, and so I did this research project. I knew there was no way that I could participate in eating animals now that I knew what was going on. But I was 10, and my parents thought it was a phase. I went to my uncle's dairy farm. My dad grew up in Wisconsin on a dairy farm. We went to hang out with his brother, who still owned the farm. And I was spending time with the cows outside, and we came in for dinner, and it was steak. And I, as a little kid, was just like, ooh, I really, really feel like I should be polite, and maybe I can just eat like one little bite and put the rest, like move it around on my plate and no one will notice. And I tried. I really tried. I put it in my mouth and my body was pretty much like, this is the ultimate betrayal. You cannot, you just can't swallow this. You know, I was just spending time with the cows outside. So that was the last of it. I went to the bathroom and spit it out, and never, ever ate animals again.
Wow, now I'm jealous. I said your life was enviable, but really the thing that makes me the most envious is how young you were when you came to this realization about how wrong it is how animals are treated. A lot of people come to it a bit later. Like, I came to it fairly young, but even so, not 10. I wasn't 10 when I realized it. And I grew up on a farm, you know, so if I could change anything in my life, it would be that I would have realized it sooner. Mm. And I think a lot of vegans are like that. So, yeah, a little bit jealous over the 10-year-old standing up for animals thing.
I mean, it made it really hard for me. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and, like, you know, McDonald's headquarters is like 10 minutes from where I grew up, and that's kind of where all of that started. So it took me from being the most popular girl in my class just for being nice, like when it mattered to be nice, to being totally misunderstood. I mean, I didn't have any friends. I had like two friends in band that I only saw like twice a week. And other than that, everyone was like, why? What's wrong with her? Why doesn't she like Limited 2 and MTV? Why is she so into weird issues and stuff? I just didn't get it. So I cried a lot. It was really, really hard for me. But what's nice is that now, because I had to stick through that, now I get to meet all these people who love animals, and it's like the best thing ever, you know. It's so much fun. So meeting people like you, I mean, even if it's just, you know, over the radio, it's that makes my life so much better. I just feel really lucky.
So tell us about starting Vote Couture. So how did it happen? Like, were you always into fashion? Did you go to school for fashion?
So I didn't go to school for fashion. That's usually the first question someone asks me, which is when I hear that I have a fashion label. But I kind of have a weird relationship with fashion. When I was a kid, you know, I didn't dress cool at all. You know, I have a picture of myself wearing like a vintage cow t-shirt with like matching black and white pinstripe bee pants, or gingham pants actually, and then like red detailing and then earrings I made myself. And like at the time, everybody was wearing perfectly matched outfits from the Gap and wherever, and I was not, it was not right. I mean, maybe now this would be a cool outfit somewhere, but it certainly was not at the time. So, you know, I would make my own puffy paint t-shirts. There were slogans on them about animals, and make my own jewelry in my easy bake oven. And I just didn't really know what the fashion rules were, and I didn't really know how to follow them. And so I was always the artist in the class. Creating is what I love best. I would sell my art on my bed when I was like a kid, you know, to my parents and neighbors. It was ridiculous, for like 23 cents or something like that. But as far as like fashion design goes, No, I don't even have any sort of experience in working in the fashion industry until I had to learn how to do it for Vogue. I went to school to be a principal. I really wanted to work in the school systems to help encourage people to become more active in their communities and not feel like a cog in society. But when that didn't work out, which is a long story, I had to think about what I was meant to do, and I realized that spreading awareness for animals was what I naturally instinctively was good at, and doing it in a welcoming way. For me, it's really about finding where someone's heart is already open and then making the connections for them to expand their circle of compassion to other beings and also to change their viewpoint on the world from being a silent participant in industry structures to being an active, proactive person in their own life and their own world. So to me, when I realized what I loved was running campaigns, I knew that in a real world sense, I guess that was marketing and events. So I got an internship at a place called Sittercity. It's now actually a really big company, basically like a website for parents and babysitters to match up. It was really cool. And the CEO was really young. And without realizing it, she's making a huge difference in all these moms' lives. And I was like, wow. So if I want to make the biggest difference I can for animals, I need to figure out which business I can create with who I am that will push an industry forward in some way. And so I went back to school to get my MBA, and I was modeling in Hong Kong the summer after most of the program was over. And I was in Hong Kong, and at night I would just go through any ideas I had that I hadn't really finalized yet. And one I had kind of thrown away before was outerwear. I mean, I'm from Chicago, and I know since you're from Canada, you know how hard it is to find an amazing winter coat, one that's warm and beautiful, let alone one that's warm and beautiful and vegan. So I had always had that struggle, and I said to myself first, like, well, what kind of market is there for vegans, who'd want to buy this type of coat that I would spend time creating and doing fabric research? And then it hit me. I realized that if I created something that was better than wearing animals, if I looked at deciding not to use animals in the equation and not use traditional fibers like wool and down in the construction of a coat, that if I use that as an opportunity to look at it differently, to create something actually better, then that would be a way for me to tell the world that we don't have any excuse to wear animals, that there's no reason to wear them. And so that became my mission. I quit everything. I quit my modeling contract with Ford Models. I quit my MBA, which I had a full ride for, which was it felt kind of silly to quit it, but at the same time, I only went to school so that I could start a business for animals. So I knew the momentum was there. I knew the time was right. I quit everything and then started on 80-hour weeks, 8 months of fabric research so I could develop the first winter dress coat that was warm enough for Chicago winter, warmer than wool, but completely ethical, completely vegan. So.
And so what was the answer? What was the fabric?
Oh, what was the fabric? Oh, so what I ended up doing was, first I started out with very eco-conscious cloth of fabrics like organic cotton and hemp and things like that, which were beautiful. But there are like 10 different major points of what I'm looking for when I was creating. And my parents are both science people, so I don't design like a typical fashion designer. I design more like from a inventor engineering standpoint, trying to get all of these things to come into alignment. So that's like drape and warmth and feel and weatherproofness and price point and sustainability. And so I ended up realizing that if I worked with high-tech mills that were on the cutting edge of sustainability, like the ones that Patagonia and North Face sometimes work with, that I could create a coat with the weatherproofness of a Patagonia coat, but the look of a winter dress coat. And then using their high-tech sustainable fabrics, it would also be eco-conscious and vegan. So it's not just one fabric that I use. It's a combination of fabrics that haven't been combined this way before and some that haven't ever been used before. And they're just from high-tech mills. So I just work with technical fabrics typically and sometimes combine them with very plant-based organic fabrics too.
So I was so curious to know what this fabric was that you spent all this time researching that I sort of only in retrospect grasped what you said previously. Did you just say that you gave up an MBA and a modeling job? You just dropped them. I'm stressed just thinking about that.
I mean, I guess it was kind of, I don't know if it was stressful so much as that there's a stress that comes with not having found what you were meant to do. And I think that that was pushing me towards just being ready to give up other things that weren't quite a fit for the thing that was a fit, even if it was a little bit painful. I mean, entrepreneurship can be very painful. But yeah, I feel like every part of your life, whatever happens to you, is a tool you can use throughout your life. And they all just end up being, you know, amazing experiences that can add up to giving you opportunities that you can put together that nobody else could put together that way. And for me, that's, if I hadn't modeled, I wouldn't have had marketing background knowledge for fashion, because then I knew how to run a photo shoot and how to do a casting, and just from being in the casting and being in the photo shoot. So I kind of saw it as like something that was leading up to that, you know?
So you're a startup now, you're investigating these fabrics. How did you go from that to doing a solo show at New York Fashion Week with sponsors like the HSUS and PETA and Farm Sanctuary? Like, what?
Yeah. That's so sweet. I don't know. I guess there's one day at a time. It's like we started in the bottom of the recession. So when everybody else was closing as far as fashion labels and boutiques, especially in the ethics realm, that's when I was starting. And what's interesting about starting in during a recession is that, you know, when everybody's pulling back on different things, that's when you get, it's easier for people to hear you and to become part of your journey. So I really just focused on creating something that people would want. And so we ended up launching for pre-orders the following summer. And when we did that, you know, I did it because I had to. Originally, I had planned to fund production from wholesale orders from boutiques, but since a lot of the ethical boutiques were closing at the time, I didn't and I couldn't. So someone asked if they could pre-order, and I said, oh, sure. And it was like July, like 100 degrees out. And, you know, nobody knew me, and they hadn't felt the fabric. These are all new fabrics. And it was interesting. I spent the next 3 days with my web guys developing a pre-order system online. And then people all pre-ordered. We had hundreds of pre-orders, and they waited 3 months to get their coats. And only three people had returned their coats because they were too small for the extra small. One of those people actually met me on tour and ended up switching to another coat. So for as far as online orders go, returns are pretty high rate. I think it's like 30% on average. And that was pretty amazing. I felt so lucky that people supported what I was doing so much. So yeah, so that happened. And then the following year, I moved to New York City. When I came to New York, actually the first time I really stayed in New York, I stayed with Joshua. And I could not get over how much it felt like home to be in Brooklyn and to be with people who cared so much about animals like I did. And I never knew that I could feel like that. I feel like there are things in your life that, you know, like career and location and love, that like you don't know how it feels until you feel it. And I never knew what it felt like to feel at home somewhere until I came to Brooklyn and found the community of entrepreneurial people who care so much about animals.
So before you go on, I just want to let everybody know who Joshua is, because I'm going to be interviewing him later. But his name is Joshua Katcher, and he is a fashion designer as well. And I won't give too much away, but how did you meet him?
He had his blog, The Discerning Brute, which, you know, it's like the ethical men's guide to fashion and lifestyle. And I left a comment on his blog, and he knew about my label through Chloe Jo Gabus, who runs the Girly Girl Army. And so when I left a comment, he sent me a personal email, and I was like, oh my gosh, he sent me an email. So so then his email said something like, if you ever need assistance with anything in New York City, my roommate does some fashion production assistance. And I was like, oh, well, I bet New York City has great production. You know, we should really step up our game. I'll contact her and see if maybe we can start doing some development in New York. I had no plans to move to New York. I didn't ever think in a million years that I would ever consider that. And so then when I came to New York City to do that development investigation, you know, I was staying with his roommate, but that meant by default I was staying with him. So that whole week was just instantly amazing. And, you know, we went to the Cool versus Cool HSUS Awards, the Humane League of New York, or Humane Voters of New York. They had a gala, and like they were just, it was just wonderful. But we had so much fun. So that's how we met, and just instant best friends. So I see him every other day now.
Wow.
Two blocks from me. Yeah.
And then the Fashion Week thing happened.
Oh, yes. So Fashion Week is interesting. So I moved to New York, summer of 2010. January of 2012, I opened our first store. That's a whole different story, if you want to get into that later. And then a year later, it was the month before Fashion Week. It was literally 4 weeks before. And entrepreneurship, when you're self-funded, gosh, you know, I mean, you're just constantly working with what you have. And, like, never enough time for anything. So I make decisions on the spot. You have to. And basically I was like, okay, I got 4 weeks till Fashion Week. I've been thinking about doing it, but I only will do it if we have a legit location. Because if we have a really legit location, then we'll be considered for the actual grid, for the Fashion Week grid. And I only want to do this if we're able to tell the fashion world and the fashion industry that we're valid, that veganism is not something that is for an alternative lifestyle and vegan fashion isn't, but that it's the future. It's the future of fashion. It's the future of living, is to consider all living beings and to eat and dress and live in a way that is compassionate towards all life and towards the environment and towards yourself. So to do that, you know, it's so important for it to be in the language of the industry. And that meant, you know, an incredible location and industry models and everything to be just perfect and brilliant. So with the budget that I have, I was like, oh, let's see how this goes. So one of my girls, she called some locations that were like the locations besides the Lincoln Center, because Lincoln Center was all booked up. And one of them, the guy actually called me back and he's like, listen, I know you can't afford this, but you and the girl who works for you are the nicest people that I've ever met in fashion. And if there's something I can do to help make this possible for you to show your first solo show in our space, like, I want to do that. And I later found out that he'd actually rescued his cat off the street. This man is a sweetheart. So, you know, got a little bit of a deal, but it made it possible for me to show. And once I knew I had this space, I was like, this is it. I'm doing this. So I had 4 weeks to create not only a show, but then we had, you know, Vogue and Condé Nast and CNN and U.S. News and World Report and all of those coming to, but also a collection. So I had to create a collection with just me and an assistant who was really interning for me at the time. She'd never been to a Fashion Week show in her life. She'd never been a part of production before. She just ran around with me. I cried every night the week before, like, no one to show up. It was one of those things where, like, you just don't believe that all of that is going to mean anything. And I was so certain that it was just going to be the worst. And then the Sunday before the show, we're doing fittings. And I was like, this is just terrible. It actually looks okay. I was like, this looks okay. And I just kept rearranging things and changing things. And I was like, all right, okay, I feel okay. Oh, the RSVPs are coming in. Oh, wow, okay, this person's coming. Like, WWD will be there. Like, I was like, all right, okay. So then the day came, and I mean, then I hadn't slept in like the whole month. And my mom had showed up. I had strep throat. I never ever get sick. I mean, you know, mostly I haven't gotten sick since then, actually. And it was just, I was at my limits. And then the show started. And the week before, CNN had actually called me just for a quote about how popular fur is. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to be like, oh, we're going to talk to this girl about, you know, this one girl who's against fur. So we can get a quote to go at the end of the article, just like to basically contrast the rest of the article talking about how great and how popular fur is. And some point during the interview, she just changed her mind. She was like, I'm not going to write this. She didn't tell me that. She just decided that she wasn't going to write that article at first. She wanted to write the article instead about what I wanted to do with my life, what I was working on for animals and why we don't need to wear them. And so I didn't know this until I realized we'd spoken for an hour, and then that she sent two reporters and then a photographer to the show. And one of the reporters ended up doing the CNN breaking news piece, which was on TV. And then the other one ended up doing the piece that you read from, which was on the cover of CNN.com. And it's crazy because it's like, it's so funny to me that, you know, if you think that something is a little thing, like I was just being called to give one quote as a contrast to popular first story. I feel like everything is an opportunity, but the biggest opportunity is to allow someone to really hear how much you care about something, because they're so used to talking to people who don't really care about stuff. And so if you like speak from your heart, it's kind of amazing sometimes what will happen from that. And so many things have happened from just that article that was on CNN for me. And I just feel so lucky that she really listened to me, because things would be different if she hadn't.
So what happened as a result of the CNN coverage?
I mean, there are a lot of different things in the works I can't really talk about, but a lot of great things.
But we'll find out soon enough, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
So you talked about having to make sure your show fit in with the industry in order to ensure that it was taken seriously. But at the same time, you really didn't pull any punches with your messaging. You not only had the vegan food and the rescue dogs, but some of the clothes actually had some pretty uncompromising slogans. The one that springs to my mind is a t-shirt that said, "I can't even look at you in that fur." So even though you wanted to fit in with the industry, you still made the company's ethics pretty front and center. Can you talk about that decision a bit?
Sure, sure. Yeah. So that's kind of my philosophy, is just that if you're able to speak in a way that people can relate to you and feel connected to you in some way and then understand you speak in their language, then they can hear what you have to say. And then you say what you want to say. And for me, you know, not only did I want to make sure that they made the connection with veganism and that we had amazing, beautiful vegan desserts from Vegan Treats, my friend Danielle and Vegan Treats, obviously, you know, I mean, they were named one of the top 10 bakeries in the whole world by American Express, not just, you know, vegan bakeries, but any bakeries. And so she's incredible. And I mean, beautiful food is one thing that definitely changes people's minds and opens them up to realizing that it's not a sacrifice to care. It's not a sacrifice to think of other living beings. And so that was important. But then to have the rescue dogs there, you know, I really wanted for people to open up where they were already open. And when I had a group in college, at first I went to Purdue my freshman year. That was the year I went vegan. And it was crazy because there was a group that cared about animals like dogs and cats. And then there was the group I was in, which cared about all animals. And I couldn't understand why the groups that cared about dogs and cats didn't like us. I was like, wait, what? We all care about animals. And then when I started a group in DePaul University in Chicago, once I transferred, I was like, you know what? Anyone who misses their dog or cat, I want them to come with us to the animal shelter that we have hundreds who are looking for homes and take that place where their heart is open already, where they miss their dog, they miss that relationship they have with one individual animal, and they open that up to other animals like that animal, so then to all the homeless dogs and cats. And then to make that a proactive thing, let's think about what can you do in your life, adopting, staying and neutering, telling other people about how amazing these animals are who need homes. And then from there, I would have those volunteers come with to volunteer at the circus protests we did, or where Howard Lyman was speaking, you know, on campus. I wouldn't think that the same people, if I said to them, oh, why don't you come, you know, this guy who was an ex-cattle rancher and now he's vegan and he wrote this amazing book, and why don't you come see him speak and help us spread the word? I mean, those people might not necessarily be ready for that. But instead, if we talk about opening their heart first where it's already open, to that one animal relationship they have, and then to other animals like the animal, and then to other animals not like that animal, you know, that's where I find it makes the most sense to reach the mainstream and also to reach people who are kind. Most people are so kind and they just haven't been given the opportunity to know the issues and also to know how they can be active in making a difference in their daily life. So my purpose for having adoptable dogs at the show was A, to get them adopted, and a lot of them did get adopted, but also B, for people who wanted to come to the show and think, oh, vegan fashion isn't relative to my life, but instead for them to say, oh, look, there are adoptable dogs here who need homes, and there are lots of animals who need homes. And living a proactive lifestyle also includes considering animals. And I get it now. I get why this fashion line loves animals. They wouldn't want to wear them. They don't want to wear wool and fur and leather and silk, just like they want to make sure that dogs and cats are not put to sleep just because there aren't enough homes for them and people aren't adopting and spaying and neutering. So these are all different things that I strategically wanted to do, including have t-shirts that made bold statements so people can make those different connections while also feeling connected to us. That was really important to me. And yeah, like you mentioned in the article, having Farm Sanctuary, HSUS, and PETA and PCRM on hand to talk to press and visitors and guests about why we don't wear animals.
So we are just going to pause for a really brief break, and then we will be right back with Leanne May Lee Hilgert, and we'll be talking about her business, Vote Couture. Welcome back to the show, Leanne.
Thanks.
Before the break, we were talking about your show at New York Fashion Week and how even though you made a point of fitting into the industry in terms of having the right location and the right format and all of the right things that you're supposed to have in order to be taken serious by this industry, you also made it an opportunity for activism. Now, I guess my question for you is, have you experienced any pushback from the industry because of that?
It's interesting. I mean, I think that instead of pushback, what I first experienced was just being ignored. So for the first few years, you know, I would get like a contact at a major magazine or a major fashion company. And as soon as they heard that we were vegan or sustainable, they would say, we're not really interested in that. And they would just assume that what I had to offer was not valid or legitimate in terms of fashion, design, and fabrics. So that was interesting. It's kind of like if you give someone a cupcake and you're like, hey, I made vegan cupcakes. And they're like, oh, that's okay for a vegan cupcake. But if you didn't tell them, they would be like, this cupcake is so awesome. And then you'd be like, oh, yeah, by the way, it's vegan. You'd be like, oh, okay, cool. So it's interesting. It's like it's the same thing with fashion. I did feel that for a while. And there's still definitely elements of that. It's like, you know, the industry might not necessarily see that what we're doing is something they love if they first see the word vegan or ethical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been interesting. But at the same time, you know, Condé Nast, their marketing team, came to my show and the marketing director called me for a meeting a couple weeks later. And she sat me down and she goes, listen, I didn't see your show. My team saw it. They loved it. I love fur. So tell me, why is this relevant to me? You know, why should I care about vegan fashion? And I told her, and I basically focused on the fact that I wasn't here to create an alternative option. I was here to create the future of fashion, that I know that for it to be relevant and for it to be a sustainable business, for us to actually create change in the industry, we needed to create something better. And when I talked to her about that and technology and innovation, then she ended up pitching me for this campaign that Mazda 6 was doing called their Game Changer campaign, all about changing industries with innovation, courage, creativity, and conviction. And they pitched me against Lauren Bush and for some reason picked me and put vegan all over it. So it was kind of amazing that they considered this to be relevant to everybody, same as Business Insider named us one of the most innovative businesses in New York City. And that shocked me. And like being the kid, you know, growing up who no one even talked to as soon as they found out that all I cared about was animal issues, it meant so much to me that Business Insider and Condé Nast were saying, innovation without animal fibers is relevant to everyone. And for them to say that, I mean, that just made me so happy.
So tell me about who you are as a person. Because if there's one thing I have noticed about successful, what you might call vegan entrepreneurs, is that you guys all seem like really upbeat and have this unfailing faith in the ultimate goodness of humankind. Is that you?
Oh, yeah. I was voted happiest in my high school. We had a really big high school. And like, I definitely believe that people are very, very good. And they just don't, they haven't had the chance yet to either realize that they can make a proactive difference with their life or learned about the different issues. And everyone's on their different journey. And I'm happy to reach them the way that I possibly can.
So back to the clothes for a minute. So do you now design everything or do you have assistant designers or?
Yeah, good question. So because I didn't go to school for fashion, people often assume that I just have a full design team or designers. But since I was the artist in my class growing up, you know, honestly, when I went to school for education, one of the saddest things to me was that I didn't get to do art. And there's like one class I could take that was like art for elementary school teachers or something. And I took that and it was great. But as far as like real art, like I missed it so much. And I didn't realize that I was setting myself up to be able to do art every day. And not only creating art through fashion, but also creating art that's, you know, I art direct, you know, the website and our newsletters and the store and the space and all of that. So as far as designing goes, the first couple of designs we did as an illustration competition around the world, and we had 8,000 votes in 6 days vote for their favorites, and then I took it from there. But other than that, I really focus on designing and art directing nearly everything. I do have obviously a team of sample maker and pattern maker and assistant production manager and things like that. And they're wonderful. We collaborate on it. You know, it's like everyone has a great voice and input in terms of like what would be fun for them to wear. You know, when we're doing, we're working on a bag design right now, I got everybody together and I was like, what do you want in your bag? What is it that when you're walking around New York City and you're on the subway all day, what would you just love to be able to have functionally speaking? And how can we make that cute? That's all, you know, a big part of it too. But art directing, my favorite thing. So that's definitely something that I definitely take very seriously.
So you've mentioned coats and you've mentioned now bags. So what exactly is the lineup? Like, what do you sell?
So the perfect winter coat was our mission. And by our, I mean mine, because it's just me for the first few years. But that was the mission, was to create the perfect winter dress coat, warm enough for Chicago winter, made of totally ethical, eco-conscious, made locally, and vegan. But then after that, I added down alternatives. So we do a down alternative with Primaloft Eco. So that was invented as a down alternative by the Army. And we do a recycled fiber version. And then the shell and liner are made of recycled plastic bottles, and that's windproof and waterproof.
And what model is that? Because it so happens that I am in the market for a new parka type thing myself.
The Lincoln is our full-length insulated coat. It's like the craziest warm coat. Like, I wore it during the vortex, walking like 3 miles a day, and I was like perfectly warm. Especially if I go to an event in a dress, I can just wear it, and it's like full length, so I'm all good. We're nearly sold out. I think we might have one left. We probably will run it again next year. It's our most requested coat, but it takes the longest to make because it's essentially like two coats in one. But I do also do an insulated right above the knee length coat, and it's hooded and it's so cute, called the Chelsea. It's named after the first neighborhood I had my studio in. So we actually didn't take photos of it yet. We're going to take them on Friday. We finished this coat late, and because of that, we're going to do a really big sale when these photos are finished, probably in like a week or two. It's a great time to buy a coat because we're going to be photographing all the colors and styles that we'd only had available in store and not online until now. And we'll have like a one day, like $185 a coat, which is like, I don't know how much that is off, but quite a bit, in about a couple of weeks. So that might be around the time that this airs. So yeah, it's called the Chelsea. It's like a belted, hooded, insulated, down alternative coat. It's so warm.
And then you've got t-shirts. We've mentioned those too.
Yeah.
And I think you have dresses. And I think you even have some men's stuff now. Is that right?
Yeah. So we added men's coats.
Is Joshua feeling the competition?
I started the men's coats before he started his line. He actually helped me. He let me know like what he would like, you know, and that's always really fun. We bounce a lot of ideas off each other. So, and then I added a ready to wear last year. So I included, you know, button downs, and for women, we had dresses and skirts and overalls and pants, all of that, made of organic velvets, things like that. And then, yeah, the t-shirt line, I'm actually starting a new t-shirt collection. It's going to be two designs that are collaborations with nonprofits per month. So we're going to be launching those every month, which will be the first month in April is going to be Born Free. We're doing a Forget Me Not t-shirt with a fox on it. And then the other one's going to be Earth Day New York. We're doing collaboration with for Earth Day. So every month there will be two new nonprofit t-shirts that we raise money and awareness for a different nonprofit, and then specifically raise awareness on an issue that most people probably don't know about. So that's the casuals as well.
And that actually raises another question for me, which is how else, other than in the ways that we've discussed already, does your activism permeate your business? I noticed you have farm sanctuary days and Woodstock farm animal sanctuary days,
yeah,
and things like that. I just saw them on the Facebook. Mm. So can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. When we first launched, we did one of our coats. We had donated the profits to Farm Sanctuary because it was the reason why I wanted to start the line, was that we didn't need to wear wool. And I visited Farm Sanctuary, and the sheep are just my favorite animal ever. So I wanted to raise awareness on that. Most people think wool is just a haircut, and it was important for me to let people know that they're sent to slaughter after, and the factory farming conditions are just awful, but the shearing process can be really cruel as well. So that was really important to me, and to put faces to the animals that are rescued, which means to put faces to all of those animals that are not rescued. And so I did a nonprofit week a few weeks ago where every day we raised awareness and funds for a different nonprofit, so that all of the people who love fashion or love the environment or love one issue can then learn about different issues that each different organization really focuses on. And then with the t-shirt collaborations, we're going to be doing specific weeks then for those different groups again as well. Yeah, that's something that's really important to me. When I asked myself how I wanted to make a difference for animals, it was to innovate in an industry so that we could make animal production unnecessary. It was also to bring a new face to animals, especially farm animals, that people could see them and see them as individuals, see that they were wonderful, incredibly beautiful beings, and then also to raise money for those groups that dedicate their lives and their work to raising awareness and to getting action done for animals as well. That was a threefold mission that I had when I started the company, that I wanted to do something for the animals in those three ways.
So other than your own company, would you say that there's a rich fashion world available to vegans? Like if there's other vegan designers, I guess, what are some of your favorites?
So before me, there were a lot of accessories. People really focused on vegetarian fashion is what I would call it, not wearing fur and not wearing leather. Stella McCartney is a vegetarian designer. She uses a lot of wool and cashmere, but she does not use leather or fur. So there's some beautiful accessories, high-end shoes that she does that are incredible and really show the fashion industry some serious competition. And then there are some beautiful bag companies. Matt and Nat is one of my favorites. Inder B, the founder, is from Canada. I'm sure you know that. And he's a wonderful guy. And then a lot of other beautiful bag companies and shoe labels. A friend of mine, Anisha, owns a shoe label called Love is Mighty. And she came from a very high-end shoe designing background, decided to start her own label. And the shoes are made in an Indian village by hand to support the women in that village. And so she makes them from old candy wrappers, and you would never know it. I mean, they're just so incredibly beautiful. And the way that I found the line was the week before Fashion Week, when I was, every day was a big day. And I was like, you know, every day the whole month before was a big day, but every day I had to get so many things done. And I would just write on my list that morning, what are the big things that haven't gotten done today? And I wrote on my list, shoes. I was like, oh, right, shoes. That's important. So it was like 3 days, I think, before the show. So Monisha from Love is Mighty sent me a message on Facebook 3 days before my Fashion Week show and was like, I know it's 3 days before your show, but if there's any chance that you still need a pair of shoes or two, let me know. You know, I'm happy to provide them for your show. And I looked at my list and I said, yeah, I don't have any shoes for my show yet. That would be wonderful. So it's funny. I feel like whenever you're working your ass off and you're doing it for the right reasons, things kind of just help you out a little bit. And that was one of those things where I was like, oh gosh, I have no shoes. And so then she sent me a message like, here you go. Here's some, oh, wait, how many shoes do you need? Not one, not two, no, 17 pairs? Sure. She called everywhere and got these shoes and they were beautiful and amazing and like some of my favorite shoes ever. And so since then, you know, people request them from seeing them in the photos. So we actually carry them in the store as well. But yeah, so she makes some beautiful shoes. And then obviously Joshua makes incredible shoes that also women can wear if they have a little bit larger feet. And they're gorgeous. I mean, he uses such incredible fabrics and fibers. And I have a couple friends who make beautiful jewelry that are made of like recycled metals that are amazing. But yeah, as far as apparel goes, you know, I really wanted to start the line because there wasn't anything really out there. You know, there's some casual athletic clothes, some wonderful t-shirt companies. Herbivore is amazing. You know, Michelle and Josh are like two of the nicest, most fun people in the whole world. So whenever I do my tour in Portland, I stop and stay with them and we have the best time ever. So yeah, they're incredible and I adore them so much.
Whenever you do your tour?
Oh, so I tour. So the first season, when I started the line, I decided since people wanted to try on coats that I would go on tour. So I started by doing my first tour in East Coast. It was DC, Boston, and New York City. Unfortunately, geography is not one of my best skill sets. So when I originally scheduled the tour stops, I scheduled them based on the best flight prices. And then when the prices went up, because I didn't buy my flights in time, I ended up just renting a car and driving between the three cities. And so when I was driving from DC to Boston, in the middle of it, I was like, man, this is a really long drive. And I'm like, and it's really slow right now. Like, what's going on? And I looked up and I realized it said, welcome to New York City. And I was like, oh. So I basically added 8 extra hours to my driving because I just didn't know how to look at a map and be like, all right, it would make more sense DC, then New York, then Boston, but not DC, Boston, then New York. Not a good idea. So that was my first tour. But yeah, I tour all over the country, and then they just flew me to Seoul and Tokyo last November to do a show. Yeah, there's a wonderful production company that the owner is vegan, really cares about animals, and they were putting on a show for CARE, which is an incredible organization in Korea, and then PETA Asia. And they had some designers from Asia, and then they asked to fly me in from the States so that I could show the collection, because everything they'd shown before was faux fur, but they wanted to show my collection because I talk about how we don't need to wear animals at all, including wool and silk. So that was the most amazing thing. It's so much fun. They translated me. I'm terrible at being translated because I just ramble clearly. So they would be like, Leanne, you need to stop after each sentence. Okay, you need to slow down. Okay, good. And I'd be like, all right, fine. So that was amazing.
So my next question is that since we've been talking so much about work, now I just want to shift a little bit, because when I was emailing you originally to arrange a date for this interview way back when,
yeah,
I was suggesting one specific date, and you wrote, I'm actually in LA at that time for the Genesis Awards.
Oh, yeah.
So you, like, really lead a really crazy life. Like, you go to these events, and Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi are there,
yeah,
and Emily Deschanel. Like,
yeah,
what's that like? Is it weird, or is there, are you used to it now?
I mean, it's so much fun. I don't, it's funny because it's like the business life is so interesting. It has such different dichotomies to it. Part of it is that every day you're taking huge risks with everything, money and time and effort, and never knowing what will come from it. It's so scary. It's terribly, terribly scary. And the stakes are really, really high, especially when you're doing it not for yourself, but you're doing it for the animals. You know, I feel such an obligation to get this right. And so there's that, and a lot of self-doubt, and, you know, and all the things that can go wrong in production and all of this stuff, and doing it on like no budget, and just doing your best with the smallest team of brilliant people. But there's a lot. And then there's the wonderful, amazing, fun events and incredible people that I get to meet and find out that we all care about animals. And it just is mind-blowing. And it's all fun. Like, when my team and I get to create something, and when we go through those trials and tribulations, and we do the challenge of creating something with such a little budget and such a little team that we know some regular company or, you know, funded company would have 5 times as much to work with. There is such a joy in that as well. I mean, it's really incredible. And my team is the best. I mean, they're so outgoing. They're so sweet. They're so warm. They care so much. And we just giggle all the time and have so much fun together. So it's an interesting, variance of life. But I spent the day on the set with Emily Deschanel for Bones for that trip, actually. Joshua and I hung out with her all day and got to eat some amazing vegan ice cream called Stella's Best that was like peanut butter cups in the ice cream, and like it hadn't been released yet. It was so yummy and so fun, and nobody else even knew how great it was because everybody was like, oh, it's vegan ice cream, and you know, they didn't even touch it, so we ate the whole thing. But yeah, that was great, and Emily is such a sweetheart, so down to earth.
Okay, so we're about nearing the end of the interview, but before we go, I wanted to give you the opportunity just to say whatever you wanted to say for the last couple of minutes. Of course, let people know where they can find your website and
Sure. Even
what's next for you if you want people to know.
Okay, yeah, totally. They can find us at Vaute Couture, VAUTECOUTURE. On Instagram, I use Instagram almost daily, so that's kind of like a peek into my daily life to see like what travels are like or what I'm thinking about or what I ate with Joshua that day. It's nothing really spectacular, but it's just if you want to just keep in touch. And then Facebook, we do a lot of voting on new designs. And also, lots of times I might launch something limited edition, and I don't want to bother everyone with a newsletter, so I might just post it on Facebook for that. So if you want to keep an eye out for, you know, new stuff, voting on things, as well as stuff that's just going to be a few made or something like that, then you can keep an eye on our Facebook, which is just, you know, facebook.com/Vaute Couture. Yep. And then our website is just vautecouture.com. But there's so much going on. It's hard for me to even think about what I want to say about that. But this was super fun. So I really appreciate you spending the time to talk to me and everybody else for listening. And I hope everyone's having a great day. And I think the biggest thing that I always like to say is that, if you're thinking about starting something or thinking about taking a risk for the animals, to just focus on doing it and not to worry so much about being perfect. Because if you just have something perfect in your head and you keep perfecting it, and we never get to see it. And I think everybody has tools in their life that they don't even realize are just this combination of tools that only they can share and only they can use to serve the world and serve the movement with who they are. And we would love to see what comes from that and what everybody thinks is imperfect and what they think isn't enough. It is enough. And I would really love to see, what everybody wants to share. So that's it.
Wow, I don't know about everybody else, but as soon as I get off the phone, I'm gonna like write a novel and go on a diet and run a marathon and invent something important. You know, I'm going to self-actualize, damn it, and realize my potential. I want to be like Leah.
Funny. Oh my gosh, you're so sweet. So sweet.
In all seriousness, though, thank you so much. You really are inspirational
Thank
and just
you.
really so deserving of the success you
Oh,
found.
thanks.
And I really encourage everybody to check out that website, vocature.com. The clothes are really beautiful,
Thank
and I'm
you.
sure there are a lot of folks like me out there who have had a hell of a time finding a nice warm winter coat that is not only vegan, but that's ethical in a more all-encompassing way.
Yeah, the best time to order them is either when we're having this big spring cleaning sale in the next couple of weeks, or to sign up for our newsletter. And we do a big pre-orders in the summer. It's going to be in July this year, a little earlier than normal. But since I'm self-funded, we're funded based off pre-orders. So you get first pick. You get to pick out your coat before everybody else does, and you get 50% off for the first day. So it's just one day, so you have to keep an eye out for it. And then after that, it goes up and up until it's normal price. Or you can just do the clearance sale at the end of this season, which is in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah. So thanks so much.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. If you enjoyed this show, it will be posted very shortly on our website at animalvoices.ca, where it will join an archive of over 400 shows, which we've been producing over the last 18 years. If you're looking for stuff similar to this show, you know, we haven't really done a heck of a lot on fashion. But of course, there is lots and lots on fur, to which vegan designers like Leanne are trying to give an industry-wide heave-ho. And very shortly, we will be interviewing Joshua Catcher of The Discerning Brute. Leanne referred to him a couple of times in this interview, so we'll be getting the man's perspective on vegan fashion from him. So that is it for today. Big thanks to the Animal Voices team. I'm Erin O'Sullivan. Thanks for listening.